in the fabulous city of New York City, which, you know, Broadway is still Broadway. But we want to welcome everybody back to the greatest city in the world, on the planet Earth, in this solar system, no matter what anybody thinks. And we're coming back. We were away. We were away for many, many moons. Kurt, what happened to you? You disappeared.
Yeah, I went away for a few months. And, you know, there's definitely some virtue in taking a break, but it's about time to be back, and I think everybody's eager for the city to get back to its glory.
And also, when you were away, you realize how much of a hold New York has on you.
Oh, yeah.
I left, too. I went to the Jersey Shore, to a beautiful place with great people, and it was wonderful. And after about 2 weeks, and after getting a terrible earache from the 5G tower that was erected in the ocean, I really wanted to get back. I felt not right. Not here. As awful as it was going to be, whatever they said, I felt that I had to be here. I had to be here to help whatever I could help the people who were going to really be needing what I have to offer. And maybe it was just to satisfy my own needs, but I had to come back. So I came back to the city, and I moved into my office for a while, which I loved because I was surrounded by all my clients and all my Tibetan things and everything. But eventually I had to go home and deal with the city, which I am doing, as you are.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I don't begrudge anyone who had to leave, especially for financial concerns. Like, you know, that's obviously a reality. But, you know, if we're all in this city together, we got to stick with it and through the good and the bad. And we got to help it get back on its feet.
I think so, too. I think that where else could I be? California, I'd love to go to California. What's there now? They've got their problems. There's nowhere to run from this. I was going to go to Europe. They won't let any Americans in. I was going to go to anywhere I wanted to go. There was a reason why there was no place to go. We ended up exactly where we were supposed to be for the reason we were supposed to be there. So it wasn't just an accident that I came back to the city and you came back to the city and we're working.
Yeah, no, it's true. There's no running. It's you know, you're not going to go out into the wilderness and camp and just emerge when everything is back to normal, as much as we'd all like to do that.
I know, me too. My nephew and his girlfriend, they went, and I said, where are you going to go? He said, we're going to go to Utah. I said, Utah? What are you going to do in Utah? He said, oh, we'll camp out. I said, camp out? You don't even barbecue. And you're going to camp out in Utah? They had a wonderful time, but they came back to where they have to work and live and survive and thrive, and that was in Southern California.
Yeah, we just have, you know, it's about adapting and seeing it through. You know, I obviously worry about a winter in New York with limited access to things and
there's a very, very easy to be scared here.
Yeah, it's
but a lot of people who don't live here are scared just of New York City, and they say, and they write to me, and they say, "Is it all right there? Is it all right there?" People are scared of New York City because they're scared of New York City. But now we have other things to be afraid of. What if there's a food shortage? What if zombies are going to walk through the street? And you know, during the worst part of this pandemic, when I was actually staying in my office, it was a little scary. Certain people who were wandering around in Washington Square Park and also just around Broadway and Fifth Avenue and Sixth Avenue, they were people who were pretty desperate.
Right.
And it was scary. But you also have to not be afraid of the dark, because we are living through a dark moment. And again, I still think that whatever has been happening loves the scariness, loves people to be afraid, and that's how it attacks you. I think if you don't be afraid and you try the best you can, because it's not just you or me or anybody, it's the whole world. Even the people who are in Hawaii or in some place that doesn't have a lot of restrictions. It's everybody is going through a tremendous transformation, and the struggle is even the people who are on top and the people who run, who think they're running things, they're all going through it also.
What, since you're a man of prediction, do you think we can put a timeline on when things will start to recover in the States in particular, but kind of just everywhere, where everyone starts to kind of recover and come out of this?
I believe that's happening already, and I think that the worst moment is part of the recovery. When you have any surgery or something like that, the worst moment is when they cut you open. And that's the beginning of your healing. So here we are, America lies on the table where it cut open, and that is the beginning of our healing. Today I just read something on the net that they were giving lands back to the indigenous people, or they were claiming lands. I mean, that's part of the healing. And how far that goes, I don't know. But your question is asking, and a lot of people ask this, when does it happen, how long does it last, and is it good or bad? It's not a question of how long it lasts, because it lasts forever in the sense that your life changes and you go on a different course. So you want to know how long is this going to go, because you're nervous like we all are.
Yep.
We're all nervous about this. How long is it going to last? I believe that we have to get through a tough winter here. Now, in some places, it's very lovely. There's a lot of more freedom, and there's not, it's not everywhere. But you're a New Yorker. You're talking about here, it could be really scary.
Yeah.
But I believe that it is going to be a long, cold winter, because it's dark. The days are dark. People's immune systems are not as strong as they were. You got to try extra hard to stay healthy. But apart from that, I'm looking for the new moon in Aquarius, because I think that is the January thaw, which I think is going to come in February. And I think that there will be some opening things up in February the 11th at 2:30 in the afternoon in New York City, something like that. That's when the new moon in Aquarius takes place, and that's one of the things that I think I am hanging my hat on, that will be a more opening up. Saturn will not be ruled by Capricorn anymore, and it will be ruled by Aquarius, which means it will be ruled by Uranus and Taurus. It's a different story. Pluto remains in Capricorn, and in astrology, the slowest moving planet always wins. So Pluto in Capricorn is still there, and the regime has changed. And there's a lot of upheaval up ahead because of the election. But I believe that the upheaval will not stop, because this is the middle of a revolution. We're in a revolution. We're in a transformation of culture. But I'm also saying that things should slightly open up in February. Because in February, too, as crummy as the month it often is, you can always smell spring in the air in the Northern Hemisphere.
Right. And so that's a thaw, you're saying.
That's what I think. And that's because I want to think that. I don't want to think it's going to be horrible forever, because I thought that in March. It seemed like that was going to be horrible forever.
Right.
It isn't. It isn't, because, today's news always wraps tomorrow's fish. So we have to think that this is another phenomenon. It's a big one, because it's a turning point in human behavior and in culture and in men and women everywhere. It is a change. It is a transformation. But everything keeps moving.
So it's a new moon
in Aquarius.
In Aquarius. What does that mean for the rest of 2021?
Well, I don't think you can predict the whole year based on one new moon. But it is it's definitely a shift toward accepting the new way.
Right.
And for people to be beginning to, some people were really are looking forward to it. Not everybody's in terror of it. But I believe that it's going to, when we get rid of the year of the rat, I'm making that up. I don't know. But I'm thinking that the transformation of the year from the year of the rat to the year of the ox or the cow is, to me, a good sign. To me. I don't even know that much about Chinese or Tibetan astrology. It just, to me, I'd rather have a rat, a cow as my year than a rat.
Yeah.
And you know what happened this year? On the day that the new moon in Aquarius started the year of the rat, I was on my way to Connecticut, and I went in Penn Station, and I always take a shortcut to where the trains are. I don't take where everybody goes. And so I went up the stairs, this little kind of a corridor to get to the main gate, and a woman was standing next to me. She had bundles, and a giant rat jumped out of the corner. At first, I thought it was a dog because it looked furry. I guess they're furry. I didn't think they were ever furry. This one looked furry, and it jumped out and ran right by me. And I thought, this is the year of the rat. What's this going to mean? And it's supposed to be lucky. I think in terms of the traditional definitions, the year of the rat is supposed to be good because the rat can go where other people can't go, something like that. But I don't like particularly, I'm not crazy about rats. So I thought, oh, this is, what is this? And that was in January, or the 20th of January, when the sun became into Aquarius. I think it was around that time. Yeah, it was a new moon in Aquarius. And in the new moon Aquarius, I saw that rat. So maybe I'll see a cow.
So what does the year of a cow mean?
I'm making it up. I don't know. I like cows. I don't like rats.
Maybe that's a better way to think of everything.
I mean, you have to hang your hat on something, not just blind, childish, magical thinking hope, but of what you vibrate to. You know, when I think of the cows and the bulls and I used to love it. When I was a kid, I used to ride horses, and we went where we went. And we went up to this farm, and I remember getting early in the morning, going up on the horse to the farm. And it was amazing to see the cows, and I was only about 15. See the cows and the bulls were kept, you know, isolated. And I thought it was so exciting. I used to do it every morning that I could. Why? I like cows, so I don't know why. Because they rule the sign Cancer. I like the sign of Cancer. I don't know. I just like cows, and I like bulls. And I like Tauruses.
Do you know what this is interesting, I never thought of this. Do you know what the sign of the virus is?
No, I gave the year to Chiron. I don't know what sign the virus is because when was it, quote, born? It's a good question. Good question. Isotopically, it's a good question. Is it a being? Does it come from somewhere? Is it strictly manufactured? Is it natural? Those are good questions. I don't know the answer to them. But I personally gave the year to Chiron because that's when it really happened worldwide. At the new moon in March, early April, March, April, the new moon took place in exactly conjunct Chiron, almost exactly at the Aries point. And that meant the world stopped. So I gave 2020 to Chiron and his wife, Caraclo. But that's what I did. But every astrologer has a valid approach to his or her thinking. And they should be given the ability and the freedom to express it. I don't agree with every astrologer that writes on the internet or publishes. And I'm sure they don't agree with me. But enough people find value in what I'm thinking about that they're interested to hear it. But I gave the year to Chiron. So I don't. But what your point is a good point, is that at what point was the virus viable?
Right.
And then that would be. But I don't think anybody knows that because it was around January. But some people say it was around in November and December. People got sick and they got better. So I don't know. I guess it would be like a baby was born. When was it named?
Right.
Then, you know, when was it called something? That probably is traceable. When was it called that? Say, this is that. Just like, this is the baby.
That would be interesting.
I bet that could be found out.
Doing its chart?
Yeah, I'll bet that's interesting. But I mean, you'd have to actually...
Let me see if I can find it.
Well, you mean when it was named?
Yeah.
I guess when it was named, it would be... That's as good a time as any. You looking it up?
Yep. Yeah, it looks like on December 31st, China announced that it was treating all these strange cases of pneumonia in Wuhan. And then January 4th is when they made the official announcement that they had identified a new virus.
It's Capricorn. But that doesn't mean that Capricorn are bad people. I mean, of course not. But what it did, that was the turning point in terms of culture, because Saturn-Pluto was a repeat. It was a recurrence of the Saturn-Pluto at 29 Libra, 0 Scorpio, in 1982 and 83. So it began a whole new cycle of events and behavior. So I think that's right. But I don't like to call it Capricorn because it has accuracy, what you're saying. But we don't need that to be the case. We know that the Saturn-Pluto conjunction in Capricorn has changed our lives forever. And it was Capricorn that did it. And Saturn-Pluto conjunction in Capricorn is a total regime change. And that's what's happening. Now that it answered your question, you still have a million more, as we all do. What can we do about it?
Yeah.
When something new comes into the system, life changes. When planets are introduced, like when Pluto was introduced in 1930, it changed culture forever. And when planets are first introduced into a system, the human behavior reacts kind of resistantly to it until it understands what the symbology is trying to communicate. And Pluto always brings devastation to it, followed by emptiness, and ultimately fertility. Those are the three stages of a Pluto transit. And we're in the middle of it now in terms of the world, Pluto and Capricorn. And that's why Capricorn gets connected with this particular event. It brings something new into the system that we have to learn to cope with and accept and set limits to.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been said time and time again, but our entire daily life will be forever affected by this. Doesn't mean that things won't go back to quote-unquote normal.
They won't.
They won't go back to normal in that they won't be the same, but, like, we'll have a regular society again, but this will forever color the way it functions.
Well, people will exist.
Right.
Alongside a new regime. Maybe new beings. I think new beings are going to be a part of the new thing. And one of the beings is the virus itself. It's an entity.
Right. Right.
And we will adjust to it, just as we do for other diseases and other things. It's like an unwanted baby.
Right.
That people resist tremendously. When a new baby comes to the house, they don't want.
My real concern is that there's going to be masks for years.
I don't know. I see so many different things. First, especially the people who are supposed to be experts, First they say, don't wear a mask, then wear a mask. It's all a political thing to get people to obey. But do I personally think that it keeps you from, if you're walking in the street by yourself, that you have to have a mask? I don't think so. And even Fauci said that, and the governor of New York said that. No, it's when you're in a enclosed space with people you don't really know, of course it's safe to wear a mask. So I do it when I think it's, you know, it's proper for other people. I do, but I don't, when I'm all alone walking in the street, no, I don't. And sometimes I do. So I shouldn't say that. But it's not going to be a hang-up in my life, and it shouldn't be to anybody else's. It should, you know, there's a certain element of propriety that you can do, and then there's a part that's enforced that you can resist for health reasons.
Maybe this could actually be a good thing. Maybe when this is all over, as in when, I don't know, there's a vaccine or herd immunity or whatever it is that we can start gathering again and this kind of stuff, maybe people will have a better sense of personal space now.
I would guess so.
Right? I think that's maybe a positive.
That's
effect.
The positive, for sure. That's yeah. The positive side. The negative side of it is that it's just a destruction of intimacy.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
People will be accustomed to not shaking hands or giving each other a hug. And maybe we went way too far on the other end of it. Maybe we did.
Right. Right.
And, you know, since Regulus went into Virgo in 2012, there's a change in terms of personal space, and that's going to last for a long time, and that's changing society. So Regulus and Virgo on top of this is really changing people's emotional responses and their personal responses, and that's only just beginning. And a lot of it's for the good when you think of what kind of violations of space people have talked themselves into as correct.
Right.
But yes, in terms of conviviality and going to the movies together and doing things that join people, there has been an effort to separate people, and I wonder why. It's not just the virus.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole other subject of the effect on society that's not really just about the virus.
I don't know, but there's also a positive light of maybe it could enhance intimacy, right? Maybe if you feel a desire to, you feel some type of connection with a person and you want to pursue an intimate relationship with them, not necessarily romantic or sexual or whatever, it's just any type of anything more intimate than just casual acquaintance.
There's some goofball who thinks that you should wear the mask while you eat and right. Take it off between bites and wear it when you have sex. Okay, so there are goofballs who think...
I did see, it was on the official newyork.gov site, was talking about putting a barrier between you and your partners during sex, yeah.
That you should wear a mask?
It said mask, but it also gave other options of putting up some type of plexiglass. And yeah, it's just, I'm completely serious. It's on the newyork.gov. Putting up a wall in between you and your partner.
Gee, I miss that.
I'm sure not a single person took the advice, but...
Single people didn't.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, maybe some people like the idea of putting a wall between them and their...
But that's what exactly it does. And you see these three-year-old kids with masks on. That's what they think is normal for interaction. So,
right.
So it's going to create... You know, old people like us are going to eventually disappear.
Right.
It's the people who think that that's what the normal is and will be normal.
Right.
So life has changed permanently. Culture has in the process of changing permanently. Some of the things are good, some of the things are not so good, based on what you think is right and what you think is comfortable. It's all relative, and it is in the process of tremendous change.
I don't know. I guess I'm still just trying to remain an optimist. I said in the beginning, maybe the plus side of this is we'll enter a new for lack of a better word, hippie era when this is done, and everyone will be free love and so appreciative of being around each other, and everyone's going to be holding hands. It's going to be great.
But people of a certain age, yes.
Yeah.
They'll be so relieved to be able to sit next to somebody. But the really young people will think it's weird, probably.
Right. Right.
Somebody, a parent of a teenager, told me that what she discovered was that the kids, that they were nice kids, they came from nice homes. She said she discovered that the kids would come over to do their homework, and they would go down in the basement, and they would have sex, and then they would do their homework. And she and her husband found out. I mean, they stumbled on it, but it's... Yeah, the kids thought nothing of it. They had sex, and then they did their homework.
But now you think it's going to go the opposite, and kids are going to be so freaked out of...
Parents will.
Right.
Children have, young people have an attitude towards sex. If it's between their bodies and the rules, their bodies win.
Right.
So kids will... do what they do right now anyway. And, kids who are little now who are going to be... We can't possibly predict it. And parents are never comfortable in the... That's what Pluto generations are about. Your particular Pluto generation and all the people who are your age and in Pluto, you think they're cool. Your kids are going to be embarrassed about it. Because that's one of the things that happens. Kids are always embarrassed about their parents' Pluto.
Right.
Because it seems so goofy. But when you're in your own Pluto environment, it's normal.
This private conversation was accidentally recorded. It is not to be reproduced or redistributed.